In this secret lab, the world's top scientist is building his most incredible creation.
It has the most advanced systems ever created. A perfect robot.
Your boy?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Out! I'm Cora. Call me Astro. Hey, I think I found something.
It's just junk.
It's been dead for at least a century.
The kid has hidden talents.
You have no idea.
Greetings for the core off the chart.
My army could use a robot like that. Mobilize all units. I want that thing now.
What's with you guys?
We got it, sir. We're coming home.
You okay?
Oh.
Send in the peacekeeper. Now.
This thing on?
This October.
Ah, cool.
Declare war on them.
You want a piece of me? Who's driving?
When the world needs saving, he's built for the challenge.
I have to take care of this. Astro, no! Astro!
Astro Boy.
Huh?
I got machine guns in my butt.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike Tricia.
How you doing today, Mike?
I am doing well. It's another wonderful day in the frozen hellscape that is the northeast of the U.S.
Yeah, did you get a lot of snow near you today?
Not too bad yet, but I think I might be snowed in tomorrow.
Okay,
we'll
see. That's what I hear is probably coming for me today, tomorrow night. I didn't get any snow today. I was surprised because I was told I was going to get like between 1 and 25 inches of snow.
You'll get more snow than you've ever seen in your life. Maybe.
Or nothing will happen is basically what it is. So I think we're looking at probably being snowy tomorrow, but this isn't a weather podcast, Mike. This is a movie podcast. So.
Wait, what? You tricked me.
I did. I tricked you. It took us 54 episodes to pull the wool over your eyes.
Yeah.
Pull the wool under your eyes. What is it when you stop being tricked?
I don't know. Welcome to the weather forecast. I'm Mike DiCriscio. That's Mike Smith.
Yes. I mean, you got a degree in meteorology and everything just for this podcast. And,
yeah. I spent a lot of dollars on the internet for this.
We Kaiser Soze'd you in podcast form is exactly what happened. Anyway, Mike, the movie we're going to talk about today has a long and storied history as one of Japan's most beloved properties. In 1952, a new manga written and illustrated by Osamu Tezuka made its debut in Japan's weekly shonen magazine. That manga was known as Mighty Atom, but it would become more well-known when it was adapted into a cartoon TV series called Astro Boy in 1963. And that TV series is generally considered the first example of Japanese anime, actually. That's kind of...
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of the first one. And that's a style of animation that has proven especially popular over the years. I think the internet has seen a huge rise of anime geeks and stuff like that. I know you are friends with a lot of people who are anime geeks. And
Yes, that's correct.
And I am as well. I don't happen to be one of them, but I do not begrudge them their... their love of anime. That series has had a few more animated series over the years. I think most people remember this character from a cartoon in the 80s. And that property has in turn become one of the most successful anime franchises in the world. So naturally, for years, studios were trying to make a movie out of it. In 1997, Sony actually bought the rights and commissioned a screenplay from Todd Alcott, the writer behind DreamWorks' Ants. This was going to be a live-action version of the story, Mike. This was going to be a live-action movie.
Interesting.
And it was stopped in pre-production because Steven Spielberg started working on AI around the same time. And since that movie is also about a robot boy who replaces a dead kid.
Yep.
So Sony decided, oh, okay, maybe we can hold off on Astro Boy for a little while. And then in 2001, they got Eric Layton, the director of Disney's Dinosaur, on board to do a CGI version. And then that didn't happen. And then in 2004, they got Genndy Tartakovsky, the creator of Samurai Jack and Star Wars The Clone Wars, to do a version that would have been a live-action CGI animatronics hybrid.
What the fuck?
And I mean, out of all the versions that we're going to talk about today, I feel like that's the one that I wanted, that I would want to see the most.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. But Tartakovsky ended up leaving, and the rights ended up with Imagi Animation Studios, a Hong Kong-based company that struck up a deal with Warner Brothers to distribute three movies. And those movies included 2007's TMNT, the CGI Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that came out. There was a movie based on an anime called Gatchaman that never went anywhere. And finally, the movie we're discussing today, 2009's Astro Boy. So do you remember when Astro Boy was coming out in theaters, Mike? Do you remember seeing this trailer anywhere or anything like that?
I think I remember like probably posters or seeing somebody like on you know, Regis and Kelly or whoever it was at the time or one of those shows, you know, like promoting something.
Yeah.
So I remember it being a big deal that it was this like you know, beloved property or anime from Japan, and it was like a big deal that it was coming to American audiences and in this form and all this stuff, but I don't remember any specifics about it.
Okay, yeah, well, I think the first thing you'll notice about Astro Boy is that the cast is nothing short of insane. Like, truly nuts. Like, I texted you when I was watching the movie, and I'd be like, okay, so this starts with an opening credits crawl of all the cast members, and you're gonna freak the fuck out at every single name that pops up in this.
And you're mostly correct. I did.
Yeah. So Nicolas Cage, of course, is in this movie. That's why we're talking about it. He plays Dr. Bill Tenma, the father of Astro Boy, who is voiced by Freddie Highmore, who at this point was known for his roles in Finding Neverland and Tim Burton's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But today, he's much more well-known for playing Norman Bates on Bates Motel, the TV show. And he has a new show on TV now called The Good Doctor, where he plays the titular Good Doctor. I remember seeing commercials for that show, The Good Doctor, and people would tell me, like, oh, I'm excited to see The Good Doctor. And I would be like, I guess that's kind of interesting. But, like, if he's a good doctor, then, like, where's the conflict?
Yeah. It's just like a slice of life drama about a guy who's just a doctor and is good at it. Like,
exactly. He does his
nothing
job.
Ever happens.
Gets out. Clocks in, clocks out, 9 to 5. Yeah. Just a regular old doctor. Anyway, Kristen Bell is also in this movie, and she's on The Good Place, which is separate from The Good Doctor. She plays,
spinoff coming, I heard.
Yeah, the good TV universe of The Good Doctor, The Good Place, and The Good Wife. They're all going to... Yep. All going to culminate, and it's going to be amazing. It's going
to
be.
I can't wait to see how they write Thanos in.
I was about to do an Infinity War joke, and you beat me to it. So there it is. Yeah, Kristen Bell is in this movie playing Korra, a girl that Astro befriends, and Bill Nighy is here playing two roles: Dr. Elefun and Robotsky. Who was one of he's the big red robot in the movie.
Right.
And of course, Bill Nighy was the bad guy in G-Force, which makes that a Cage reunion, a really quick one, too. That was just the last movie we talked about.
Yeah.
And this film's villain is President Stone, played by Donald Sutherland, who also had a voice cameo in the Cage movie Lord of War as well. So that's another reunion right there. And what I thought was kind of interesting about this role of President Stone was, A, like it feels like an allegory for Trump 8 years early. But B, it also kind of seems very similar to the role that he would take on as a President Snow in the Hunger Games movies just a few years later. Interesting. And that is just scratching the surface of the people who are in this movie, Mike. Nathan Lane is in here as Ham Egg, the guy who kind of looks after Astro Boy when he lands on Earth. Samuel L. Jackson is in this movie, providing the voice of Zog, which he has maybe five lines in this movie. Did you not realize that was him?
I knew it was a voice, and I knew it was somebody that I recognized, but I just didn't bother to look it up because I wanted to be surprised.
I mean, he has like five lines total in the entire movie. This is also his third movie with Nicolas Cage, by the way, because he was in Amos and Andrew and Kiss of Death. And then you've got Matt Lucas, the British comedian who appeared as a Tweedledee and Tweedledum in Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland. He plays Sparks, the leader of the Robot Revolution Force, I think their name was, the RRF.
Yep.
And then the film's director, David Bowers, plays Mike the Fridge, also part of that Revolution Force. Charlize Theron has a vocal cameo in this movie in the beginning as the narrator of the Our Friends video. Yep. That plays at the beginning. Eugene Levy is in this movie, providing the voice of Arn, the servant robot to the Tenma family. And then you've got Moses Arias from Hannah Montana and the Kings of Summer playing Zane, while Alan Tudyk and David Alan Grier pop in periodically as Mr. Squeegee and Mr. Squirts.
The best parts of the movie.
Yeah. And then, even past that, Dee Bradley Baker's in this movie, which we mentioned. He was in G-Force as the Fly. He plays Trashcan the dog in this movie. So, again, another role in which Dee Bradley Baker is just making noises.
Yep.
So that was pretty great. Elle Fanning is in this movie. The sister of Dakota Fanning, who's in movies like The Neon Demon and Super 8. And she in American Honey? I'm thinking of something else, maybe. 20th Century Woman, I'm thinking of. She's in 20th Century Woman. She appears in a small role as Grace, one of the kids in the dumpster ground land or whatever. And finally, Ryan Stiles from Whose Line Is It Anyway is in this movie playing a character named Mr. Mustachio. And I don't know which character that was.
I wonder if he's the robot waiter.
Ooh, he might be.
When he falls off, because he's got a big mustache, a pointy mustache.
He does. So that's definitely a possibility, because he has a mustache, and that's the only defining characteristic I can think of.
Yeah.
And now the film was written by Timothy Harris and David Bowers. Harris is a writer whose name has been on movies like Trading Places, Twins, Kindergarten Cop, and his magnum opus, Space Jam. While
Don't you dare.
What? Oh, well, are you not a fan of Space Jam, Mike? Is that...
No, I don't know.
Oh, man. what kind of cold, dead heart do you have beating on your chest there?
Fair.
What horrible life do you lead? Bowers was the other writer. He also directed this movie and had previously directed a 2006's Flushed Away for DreamWorks and went on to direct the Diary of Wimpy Kid movies, numbers 2 through 4.
Four of those? What?
Oh yeah, man! They all hit theaters. They were all theatrical releases. He did not do the first one, but he did the second one, third one, and the fourth one. The fourth one was just released last summer, actually. It was that one is actually, I think, a reboot of the series, or at least has a new kid playing the titular Wimpy Kid.
But, man, the Wimpyverse is going all over the place.
But anyway, yeah. So he is the director of those movies, Astro Boy. Got pretty mixed reviews from critics when it came out, and it did not exactly light the box office on fire. Kind of came and went. It was a bomb. On a budget of $65 million, it made about $41 million. So did not do great business. But if you were at the theater on October 23rd, 2009, instead of seeing Astro Boy, you might have seen Amelia, the Amelia Earhart biopic, which starred Hilary Swank. You may have seen Saw 6, which... which up until last year was the second to last movie of the Saw franchise. Now it's the third to last. You could have seen the movie that I kind of saw, which was Cirque de Freak, The Vampire's Assistant, which was, I don't know if you remember that movie at all, Mike. It was a young adult vampire movie which starred John C. Reilly and Josh Hutcherson.
I remember that name, but I didn't know anything else about it.
Okay, I definitely, me and a bunch of friends went to the theater to go see this movie, but I had recently acquired my first girlfriend, and we just made out the entire time. I remember approximately none of this movie, but people who I was in that friend group with still bring it up to me.
What?
Every once in a while. So there's that. If you didn't see Cirque du Freak, like me, you could have been one of the dark, edgy souls seeing Lars von Trier's Antichrist, which opened in limited release that day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's definitely, you know, the crowd that would see Antichrist or the crowd that would be seeing Astro Boy definitely overlap.
Yeah. In terms of a Venn diagram, it's just one circle.
It's just a circle.
It's just a circle. The IMDb plot synopsis for Astro Boy reads... When an android replica of a boy is rejected by his aggrieved creator, he goes off to find his own identity in an adventure that would make him the greatest hero of his time. So, Mike, what were your overall thoughts on Astro Boy? I mean, I assume you're coming at this from a place of very little familiarity with the original anime or manga or anything like that.
Yes, yeah. Like I said, I remember when it came out, I remember hearing about it, or I remember hearing that aspect, that it was this kind of... really old, beloved property, and it was a big deal that it was coming to the States and all this stuff. But that was kind of it. I didn't really know anything about it. Astro Boy as a movie is pretty run-of-the-mill, I think. I enjoyed it so far as it wasn't bad. I don't know how to say that. I had no strong opinions either way.
Okay.
it was fun. I didn't. Nothing really struck me a whole lot. I don't have many notes other than wow, this cast. So when that happens, I feel like it's a movie that I just kind of I looked at my screen for 90 minutes. You know, like nothing really grabbed me that much, but it wasn't a painful 90 minutes like some of the movies we've talked about. So it's got that going for it, I guess, which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, I had a surprising amount of fun watching Astro Boy. This was a pretty solid movie. It's not great. But yeah. I think it's a much more thematically complex movie than I figured it would be. I think there's a lot going on in this movie, and a lot of it feels ripped off from other movies. When it first starts, I was like, oh, this is just WALL-E. This is WALL-E that we're watching.
right.
And it kind of evolves past that and kind of turns into more of a traditional superhero origin story.
Right.
But there is a lot of stuff in this movie that I felt like I don't see a lot in kids' movies, and particularly with Cage's character. I feel like there's a lot going on with that I'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, I think Astro Boy has a lot of stuff under the surface that makes it more enjoyable for me. I don't know how kids would react to it. I feel like there's enough fun stuff in here, but like there's some really dark stuff going on, especially in the first 20 minutes. And it makes me wonder like how old a kid should probably be if they're going to watch this. But as somebody who is 24 and spends his Tuesday nights watching 90-minute kids movies featuring Nicolas Cage in them, I had some fun with it.
Yeah, most mid-20s people do that, right? That's not weird.
That's what it is. Yeah, so I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was pretty good. I think of the voice cast, who was the most surprising addition of this cast to you? Like who did you not expect to see or hear in this movie, I guess?
I mean, Kristen Bell, which seems weird. It just seems like she's having such a moment now.
Well, Kristen Bell is in a lot of voice stuff.
She is, yeah.
She's also in Frozen.
Right, but this is before all that. So yes. So I don't know, that's sort of where my mind was, like, oh wow, look, she was doing that then also, good for her.
I think for me the most surprising voice was Charlize Theron.
Yeah, I guess that's true too.
Which that's a much smaller role. It's only she's the narrator of the Robots Are Our Friends video in the beginning.
Our friends the robots. Robots do our shopping. They cook for us. They serve our meals. They take good care of us. They even do the really important things, like reminding us to call mom on her birthday. Whether it's raising our children, building our buildings, taking care of our city, or making sure we're all fit and healthy, for these guys, no job is too big or too small. Plus, robots do a lot of the things that, frankly, we just don't want to do anymore.
Oh, no!
Don't worry, folks. That street will get clean. The best and brightest of them get picked for the more exciting tasks. This lucky guy is starting the first day at his new job. Our friends, the robots, help us. Thousands are created every day and thousands are disposed of in the great unending cycle that sustains life in our great city. Thanks for everything, guys.
First 45 seconds or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a pretty funny video. It kind of like sets the tone of the world up pretty well. That's where you kind of get like, this is WALL-E.
Right. Yeah.
But there is like I think a sort of satirical edge to it. Like it's saying like, oh, and we're just going to have the robots do whatever humans don't want to do kind of thing. And like and
yeah.
You know, and it has this like sort of a 1950s nuclear test video. You know what I mean? Where it's do you know what I mean though?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It's like this very pleasant thing, but it has like this very kind of dark underbelly that nobody's really acknowledging, where it's like, it's acknowledging that like robots do everything for you, but we also scrap them when we're done and like toss them into a garbage heap on the surface world and that kind of stuff. And
yeah, I mean, we watch, she says something along the lines of like, you know, the robots do the jobs, even the jobs we don't want to have to do as humans.
Yeah.
And it's like a robot sweeping a street and he gets hit by a car and shatters. And another robot comes and sweeps up the shattered robot. Like, that's some dark shit.
Yeah, there's some dark shit going on in this movie. And I kind of like that. You know, I like some darkness in my kids' movies.
Who doesn't?
When it's built in well. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because I remember when we talked about the Ant Bully, there was some dark shit going on in that movie. Like, there was, that decapitated head joke.
but oh my
the thing is, the dark stuff in the Ant Bully feels like it came out of nowhere, right? But the dark stuff that happens in this movie feels like it's there from the very beginning, and it feels like it's very much a part of that world.
Yeah. It's not the teenager slingshotting a gerbil into a python cage like in G-Force.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, what did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie, Mike? He plays Dr. Tenma, Astro Boy's father, and I think it's one of the most prominent roles in the movie. Actually, he's credited as in the credits that happen at the beginning of the movie, it comes up with all the names, and then Cage gets credited last with and Nicolas Cage as Dr. Tenma. So he gets like the big, you know, the big reveal, like, oh, and Nicolas Cage is in this movie. This is very exciting.
Yeah, I think he does a really good job, especially in the scenes where it's, you know, Dr. Tenma kind of dealing with the grief and trying to, like, have Astro Boy replace his son in the, like, in that part of the story, right, where he's trying to be like, show his son all these books that he never read to him, and they're all dust covered, and he's trying to pretend that he read to him and all that stuff. Right. Like, that was some intense shit happening.
Dr. Tenma is... really kind of a tragic character. He has lost his child, Toby, and wants to bring him back using his science, his knowledge in robotics and in physics and nuclear energy, and feels he can rebuild his child.
But it's the same thing that I think I talked about when we talked about G-Force, where it's just Nicolas Cage's voice coming out of this character, and he's like, at least in G-Force he was doing a voice as Specs, but everyone else was just using their normal speaking acting voice because just acting, and so that kind of took away from it a little bit, just for me, just because that's like my weird personal thing, I guess, with animated movies now. But otherwise, like, I think he's still giving a good performance. I think he manages to do a lot with, you know, the darkness that his character has to convey in a kid's movie.
Yeah. So just to be clear, I don't think we've ever actually like described what happens in the first 20 minutes of the movie. In the first 20 minutes, we're following this character named Toby. And Toby is Cage's son. And Cage is like this brilliant scientist who works for the government. There's a meeting with the president, and there's a, you know, this dark matter kind of overload or whatever. And Toby gets killed in this explosion, and it's mostly the president's fault. Or it's entirely the president's fault, really. And so when Toby dies, Cage goes into like a, you know, a panic attack, and he ends up building this new robot with, and he implants all Toby's memories in the robot. So when Astro wakes up, he thinks he is Toby, and he acts like Toby, but he's not Toby. There's differences with how he acts and like how he perceives the world and everything like that. And then Cage's arc in this movie is actually like kind of powerful, because he's like. He's dealing with a lot, you know. What I liked about this movie, I feel like those first 20 minutes, I think, are the strongest of the movie. I don't think I've ever seen a kid's movie like this that deals with the death of someone's child. You know, that's heavy. That's real heavy. And I've seen kids' movies that deal with like dead parents, right? But that's it's almost like it feels like an inversion of that. But for some reason, this just feels a lot sadder. I feel like because the dead parents thing is always a trope that is used in a lot of things, right? And that can always be played very sad. You know, that could be very obviously it's sad. But
hot take, Mike.
Hot take. Dead parents are sad. You know, with Cage in this movie, I feel like you get his grief and you get what he's going through. But then you also get this kind of like sci-fi twist on it, where he's building this consciousness to replace his son. And it's weird. You know, the first 20 minutes of this movie are basically like the last 5 minutes of Chappie, where someone dies and their consciousness is transferred to a robot. That was honestly my first thought. I was like, is this the secret Chappie sequel? This is the secret Chappie
we never
sequel
knew
that we never knew about. It's the Chappie sequel and the Venom prequel.
All in one movie.
So I think there is a lot of interesting stuff going on with that. And then when Cage rejects Astro or Toby at the time, Robo-Toby.
Yep.
Robo-Toby. Robo-Toby.
That's definitely how you would pronounce that.
Yeah, Robo-Toby. When Cage rejects him, you know, that's a very heartbreaking scene because, you know, Robo-Toby doesn't understand what's happening. He's just kind of discovered that he can fly and stuff like that, and he's like by barely perceiving it. And then he gets into a big chase sequence, and it's, you know, a lot of fun, and he gets knocked into the surface world, and then the rest of the movie starts. And
right.
the rest of the movie that starts, it's pretty fun. You know, I enjoyed yeah. it. I think it's a lot. There's a lot of things going on in this 90-minute runtime. You know, there's, you know, the stuff going on in Metro City, which is the above-ground world that's basically all the rich people. There's also, in addition to this... this conversation about consciousness in artificial bodies. This movie also has a lot of class warfare stuff going on.
Yeah.
Which, you know, all the rich people live in Metro City in the clouds, and all the poor people live on the polluted wasteland that is Earth. You know
it's the mean? Secret Elysium prequel.
It's Did Neil Blomkamp write this movie?
He actually plays all the robots. He's everybody.
Well, no, Charlotte Copley would play all the robots if that was the
That's true. Yes, you're right.
Didn't even think of that. But yeah, you're right. This movie is just doing all the Elysium stuff, or all the Neil Blomkamp stuff before Neil Blomkamp got to them.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, this came out the same year as District 9, too. I don't know if there's any District 9 stuff going on in here, but I'm eager to discover that with you the more we talk about
it. We'll get there.
Yeah. Anyway, so there was a lot of class warfare stuff going on in this movie, and there's also a lot like stuff about you know, the pollution of the Earth. That's really more of like a cursory thing. It's like, oh yeah, and the Earth got polluted, so Metro City went up to the sky,
right?
And you know, there's a lot more stuff like that. I feel like this movie is trying to do a lot of different things at once, and occasionally a lot of things get the short shrift, like that possibly environmental message, but also just the plot lines. Like you have the stuff going on in Metro City, and you have the stuff going on with Astro and the kids in the junkyard, and then you also have these like three robot revolutionary forces who are fighting for robot rights.
Yeah, that honestly is my favorite plot line.
Is it?
Yes,
I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. It doesn't like. They don't do anything.
No, and that's why it's so funny.
Yeah, fair enough. So yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on thematically, but I don't know if the movie gives enough time to each of those things. It just feels everything feels rushed in the movie. It is like a 90-minute runtime, and it's throwing a lot at you at once. So there's like three or four different plots going on, and also like 20 characters in each plot, and it's like, all right, just slow down, please, just a little.
Yeah, it sort of reminded me. Or I don't know if this is just a result of when it came out versus it when it is now, but it sort of reminded me of like a lesser Big Hero 6.
Yeah,
not that Big Hero 6 has as many like important quote unquote capital I things going on, like you know, class warfare and all that stuff, and
yeah,
and artificial intelligence and all that. But it just sort of reminded me that, like, you know, that kind of superhero origins kid accidentally discovers its power, gets powers or whatever. But I don't know. I just kept making that comparison the whole movie, and how much I'd rather just be watching Big Hero 6. So.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think Big Hero 6 is a much slicker movie, and it's probably a much more well-made movie. Yeah. I feel like this movie tries to do a lot of things with that, but it's also, you know, trying to be a pretty fun kids movie at the same time.
Right.
And it also does not have the greatest animation in the world, which I think hurts it. It's a budget of like $65 million, which seems kind of small for a big CG movie of this size. And it's basically like, I mean, it's an independent studio. Basically, it was Imagi Studios who got it distributed by somebody else. But still, it does feel like it's a little bit cheap, or at least a lot of the money in that $65 million budget must have went to the voice cast,
right?
Because again, it is massive. It's a massive voice cast. They got Samuel L. Jackson for five lines in this movie. You know,
yeah. But he's actually like a giant anime nerd, so like he might have done it for cheap.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you never.
Which is hilarious.
But anyway, yes. Yeah. So how does this role fit in with the roles that you've seen Nicolas Cage play in other movies, Mike? What do you think?
Well, it's a natural no. I think it's interesting to see him go. Cage is kind of trajectory so far, or where it currently is, right? Where he's now going into animated kind of family roles. I mean, he'll come back to that maybe not much later, but well. In many episodes, because he does a bajillion movies between this and The Croods, I think.
right.
Although, actually, I don't think it's that many. But yeah, it's interesting to see him be doing this, right, where he goes from big Hollywood leading action star to kind of leading man. You know, he's still in that kind of role. And in this, he's kind of taking a backseat a little bit, and G-Force also, but trying to also get it cash in on these sort of big studio movies, right?
Yeah.
And just knowing where he's going to go. where he's going to end up in this just direct-to-DVD, as many action movies as we can make, or direct-to-video.
Yeah.
It's interesting to watch him teeter on the precipice right now.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. I do think this is easily the best of the Cage voice roles, in my opinion.
But Specs, though.
But Specs, though. Yeah, no. Well, I think he probably gives his best performance as Specs. But I think in terms of the movies as a whole, there's a Christmas Carol, Aunt Bully, and G-Force. I would say Astro Boy is the best of those four. Also, I mean, Cage plays a scientist in this movie, and he did play a scientist once before, Mike. Lest we forget Dr. Stanley Goodspeed.
Who could forget?
In The Rock, man. And I think he plays a much more competent scientist in this movie than he does in, The Rock. Although, you know what, he's a very competent scientist in The Rock. He's not a great field agent. Let's throw
that's all, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Give him credit where he's due, but.
Exactly, yes. I mean, he does defuse a bomb in the opening minutes of that movie, so, you know, credit where it's due. Now, are there moments or scenes in this movie that stood out to you, Mike? Anything that you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, they mostly revolve around the, I think it's the Peacekeeper or Peacemaker or whatever they call the new giant robot that's that they're going to the meeting with the president about in the beginning. Mm. Where that scene particularly where Toby dies, because that's some horrifying shit.
Oh, yeah.
in the long history of horrifying shit happening in children's movies, you know where Bill Nighy's character, the doctor one, the human one,
yeah,
introduces this kind of idea of like this positive and negative force, and one is like everything that's evil sort of, and one that's everything that's good. And they want to put the good one, right? So it could go down to the surface in this robot and, like, I think clean up everything and, like, depollute stuff.
Yeah.
But the president's like, no, I need a war because I got an election coming up. And he makes it take the evil one. And, of course, spoiler alert, it goes bad.
Yeah.
And Toby gets fucking, like, disintegrated. He's not even there anymore after the big flash happens, the big explosion or whatever.
Yep.
But I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, yeah, fair. And I think this movie does have, you know, when I was looking through like Netflix and Letterboxd reviews, some of them were decrying the movie for having a political agenda, which, which whatever.
Wow.
But I think this movie is critical, specifically probably of George W. Bush.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been the time period for this movie. This came out in 2009, so Bush had been president up until 2008. And, you know, I think there's a lot to analyze with President Stone. There's a lot... I think a lot of parallels to draw between him and Donald Trump now. But there's, you know, interesting stuff going on. You could analyze it that, you know, he keeps going after the red orb, which is the color of Republican side, not the blue orb, which is the Democrat side, if you want to get, like, you know, English major about it. But
Yeah. But, which, spoiler alert, I always do.
Exactly. Or, it's also, you can put it in Star Wars terms, too, because blue is the good in Star Wars and red is the dark side. But he's like a lot of lines in the movie that just like feel like, oh, wow, this is very on the nose. There's one part, and this isn't on the nose for Bush, this feels on the nose for Trump, where he's like talking to Nicolas Cage's character and he's like, you can ask any of my wives. It's all about values or something. It's like, all right.
Yep.
But I think my favorite thing about this character is towards the end of the movie, after he's been absorbed into a gigantic robot and tries to start destroying the town, you see one of his political rallies or whatever, and there's a big banner. And the rally, and the banner says, "It is not time for change."
yeah, it's scary.
Yeah,
right. some of that was scary.
Yeah, yeah. I did think that was interesting. I thought Donald Sutherland was like, I think he was giving an okay performance, but I feel like his voice just didn't really match with the character design of that character. I don't know if you felt the same way. It felt like a disembodied voice coming out of a character's mouth to me. It didn't really feel like they matched well together.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It wasn't on the level of Bruce Campbell as the mayor in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Sure.
Which, weird pull, but that's where my mind went.
Yeah, all right. That's fair.
It's a similar character, similar type of thing.
what did you think of the stuff with the kids and the scrap heap, Mike? What about that plot line that was going on?
That was weird. mostly because it was all just to set up, to question Astro's humanity, even though he's a robot, right? All that, right. Have that whole theme come back. But to set up the big, like, robot gladiator match stuff was real weird.
Yeah, it turns into Thor Ragnarok for a few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was okay, I guess. I don't know. It didn't – nothing really – that segment didn't really grab me a whole lot. I don't think I was very interested in it. I think I was more interested in Astro fighting in Metro City, or is that what it's called?
Yeah, Metro City, towards the end. Yeah,
but I get the point. It had to serve, right? We have to bring up all the theme hashtag themes.
Right, some hashtag themes. I mean, I think, Ham Egg, which is Nathan Lane's character, you know, he's a fine villain, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
He, you know, I did like that gladiator combat sequence, mostly because when Zog shows up, Samuel Jackson has his first line, and it's the most badass line in the entire movie.
Stop! The laws of robotics! You can't hurt a human! It's been that way for 50 years!
I'm old school.
Old school, and then he, like, crushes him.
Goes to crush him.
He goes to crush him, and it looks like he does it for, like, the movie makes you think he did it for a second. And I was like, holy shit, that's amazing! But then Astro saves him, and it's like, oh, alright, fine.
Oh, fine.
But it was pretty badass. I was pretty happy about that. But yeah, I think the action in this movie is, generally speaking, a lot of fun. I think I had a lot of fun watching the action sequences. The gladiator stuff was fun, where he's fighting like a bunch of different robots at once. There's the first chase sequence in the beginning where he's being hunted down by the president's guards or whatever. And I think what I did like about this movie, I feel like there's a lot of like really goofy humor throughout.
Yeah.
And it made me laugh. I don't know. It made me laugh. A lot of it was dumb, but I laughed at it. Like I was, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it fit the world that this movie had built around for itself. It's weird. It has a lot of like dark stuff going on, but it also has a very like lighthearted adventure. So there's like bits in that chase scene where these guys have this like green sticky thing that can catch Astro. They're trying to like throw this green sticky thing at him, but they keep grabbing other things. And there's this one part where they're grabbing things, and it shows like things that they're grabbing. And the last thing they grab, there's a man proposing to his girlfriend in a park. And logically, like the easy joke to go for would be them grabbing the ring and absconding with it and the wife being upset.
Right.
But the joke this movie goes for, which I thought was much funnier, was that it grabs the wife. It grabs the woman. And then it comes back like a second later and she's being like dragged in the middle of the sky and she's just freaking out that she's about to get married. She like doesn't even realize that she's being dragged. And I thought that was really funny. I thought that was a very funny gag. And there's a lot of stuff like that in this movie, I feel like. There's a lot of like very cartoony humor which fits this cartoony kind of movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mentioned my favorite characters or plot lines. Well, I guess I mentioned two things. One was Mr. Squeegee and Mr. Squirts.
Yes.
Which are robots that clean, like window cleaning robots, but they're just a bottle of Windex and a squeegee. which is like hilarious.
Yes. Voiced by Alan Tudyk and David Alan Greer. Two Alans.
Two Alans. Yeah, and they're just like this silly thing that like recurring bit that happens at the end. You know, they're flying away from Metro City and they're like, we're getting out of here. We're being freed like two birds. Two birds should be or something. I don't remember. It's a dumb, silly line. But I did the Robot Revolutionary Front or whatever they were called.
Right.
That where after Astro falls to the surface, right? He's being like Island of Misfit Toyed, where he's like busted, broken down robots. Like we're gonna take your batteries or whatever the hell they're doing.
It's like this nightmare world for a second of the scrap heap where it turns into like they start doing the chant from Freaks where it's like one of us, and it's creepy. Yeah. It's creepy.
It's weird as shit. And he gets rescued by the humans because he looks like a human, right? So they save him, and then as they're like, oh yeah, this is what the surface world is like, these three robots zoom past, scoop Astro up, and then save him from the humans. They recognize him as a robot, and it's like they're this like Russian or you know, kind of they call each other comrade.
Yes.
This kind of like communist uprising, you know, French resistance kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's so silly.
This movie has a Marxist revolution in the middle of this 90-minute kids movie. It's pretty great. It's pretty great.
And then they make the joke about the robot laws, how they were like, we're gonna corner them and tickle them with a feather because they can't harm humans. That's great.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And I did like, I mean, there's those three guys, and the way they introduced themselves also made me laugh a lot, where it's like Sparks introduced them, like, I'm the brains, and Robotsky's like, I'm the brawn, and I'm Mike the fridge. I'm a fridge. And it's just a robot fridge. Yeah, it was good. It was
good
funny stuff. It's funny stuff. Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of stuff like that. There's one bit right before the gladiator battle where like Zog is like entering the arena, and like his opponent is like being coached, and his opponent's like it's a robot that sounds like Mike Tyson, which is like, I'm gonna beat this guy. I'm gonna beat this guy real good. And you know, it's funny stuff. I enjoyed it. Actually, you know what the funniest moment of the movie for me was?
What's that?
It was the moment where, you know, Astro, like Trash Can, the dog, knows that Astro is a robot. And
right.
he keeps trying to get Astro to tell, like, his friends that he's a robot, too. And Astro's like, I'm going to do it, you know, once they, you know, are cool with me and stuff, like, once they're used to me. And then there's one part where, like, you know, they're walking and Trash Can starts moving around, like, doing crazy shit. And one of the kids like, hey, what's Trash Can doing? And Trash Can has written in the sand, like, he is a robot and with an arrow pointing directly at Astro.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, like, a pretty funny reveal. And then the next line was like, man, I wish I knew how to read. Keep walking.
Yeah, this movie has some fun stuff.
There's some fun stuff going on. Yeah.
And the big battle at the end between Astro and the giant peacemaker what? The giant peacekeeper robot that's yeah. also President Stone, that's also half of Metro City because
yep.
it can absorb stuff.
Yes.
That was fun. That was some cool stuff happening.
Yeah, there was some cool stuff going on. Okay, it was actually very similar to the ending of the Avengers, where
yeah.
Tony Stark has to you know, sacrifice himself to you know, save everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I was into it. I was with it, and you know, it actually had a similar ending to the Avengers too, where this the gigantic member of the team brings the other one back to life. Remember in the Avengers, the Hulk roars and Tony Stark wakes up again.
Right. Yeah.
So really,
yeah, it's been a while since I've seen the first Avengers. I should watch that.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing a selective rewatch of some of the Marvel movies before Infinity War comes out. Just you know, just to refresh my memory. I mean, I've seen a bunch of them all the time, like a bunch of times, but I haven't seen Iron Man in many years. Haven't seen the Avengers in a few years. So, you know, this is unrelated to the Nicolas Cage podcast. I just like talking about Marvel movies, so we're going to do that now. It's
we've never noticed. As a listener of this podcast, I didn't know the two of us like listening to or like talking about Marvel movies.
It's crazy, isn't it? So yeah, I'm going to rewatch Iron Man, I'm going to rewatch The Avengers, probably Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, Civil War.
The Hulk.
Probably, I'll probably skip The Hulk. I'm going to do a selective rewatch for Infinity War, and then before Part 2 comes out next year, I'm going to do a whole universe rewatch. That's my plan.
Mother of God.
It's going to be crazy, man. It's going to be crazy. But back to Astro Boy.
Oh, yeah, right.
Astro Boy, not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Maybe he should be.
Not that we know of.
Just throwing that out there. He could be a secret cameo in Infinity War. We'll see.
We'll see.
You know, they got everybody else in that movie. You might just throw Astro Boy a bone, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, might as well.
I did want to talk about the ending a little bit. You know, that big battle with you know, President Stone, robot, monster thing.
Yeah.
So at the end, Astro sacrifices himself, and Zog heals him with the blue power core that Astro used to give life to Zog in the first place. I did want to talk about the part in this, the part where the kids are in the flying car, and they scoop up Astro and they save him. And there's this bit where it's like, oh, who's driving? And it turns out Trash Can is driving. He's driving the car. And it reminded me very much of a bit from Clerks the Animated Series.
Wow.
Yeah, I know that's a deep pull, but there's a bit in that show where they make a joke where, like, the episode ran out of budget. So mm-hmm. the rest of the episode was finished by a Korean animation studio, and it's like a Japanese anime type thing at the end of the Clerks animated series episode. And it's a bit where, like, you know, they're all running around, and then they get into a car, and Dante and Randall are in a car. And they're like, really? You gotta step on it. No, who is driving? Oh, Bear is driving. How could that be? And it's a bear. It's a bear is driving the car.
What the fuck?
Quickly in here. Who is driving? Oh my God, Bear is driving. How can that be? Couple of midgets. Korean animation studio.
Everybody work. Everybody work. Everybody work.
He big mean man whip us. We are slaves.
It's the best. If you haven't seen Clerks the Animated Series, it's amazing. But anyway, so I just wanted to bring that up because it reminded me of that joke. But also,
not the first time Clerks the Animated Series has made an appearance on this podcast.
I think you're right. I don't remember.
They make a Zandali reference.
That's what it was. I can't believe you remembered that. That was like 30 episodes ago.
Making it a complete works reunion.
Exactly. But anyway, yeah. So I wanted to bring that up for no reason. Also, at the very end of the movie, after Astro's brought back to life, it's a very rushed ending, I feel like, once that happens. I mean, the whole movie's kind of rushed, but, you know, after the defeat, like, everybody's like, Metro City's like, okay, we're all back to normal now, which it's not. Metro City's on the surface world now, like, it's fallen down.
Right.
And it seems like it's going to stay there, at least. And there's a lot of stuff going on, like, there's going to be a lot of stuff to rebuild your society. And as soon as that happens, this gigantic fucking squid alien yeah. comes out of the sky, and it's like, oh no, Metro City's under attack, and Astro's like, I'll deal with it, and then he goes up to punch it, and then the movie ends. And it's like, I get the idea. Like, I get the idea behind that. It's kind of like the ending of The Incredibles, where it's like, you know, a new challenger emerges, and you have to defeat that challenger. But, like, at the end of The Incredibles happens, you know, at least a few days after the actual end of The Incredibles. You know, that's like an epilogue.
Right.
To that movie. This is like seconds later, this gigantic fucking alien pops up out of nowhere.
Yeah. But I kind of liked it. I kind of dug it in some weird way. Because it's just like, let's end the movie. And what better way to end it than to have Astro keep doing the thing he's been doing for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, fair enough. So anything else in the movie you want to talk about, Mike? Any other specific scenes that you wanted to reference? Anything with Cage in it, perhaps?
Seeing as this is a Cage movie, or Cage podcast.
Yeah, theoretically we should talk about Cage at least a little bit.
Nah.
Yeah, I mean, I did like, you know, his ending kind of turn. You know, he turned his back on Astro because he wasn't Toby. But then, right. You know, when he returns, he realizes that, like, oh, there's more of Toby in him than he realizes. And in a way, Astro still is his son. And it's nice, man. It's heartwarming.
Yeah, he calls him son and he calls him dad. And
yeah.
They hug.
They hug. It's nice. It's just nice. And I think, does that wrap up our thoughts on Astro Boy? It's just nice. I feel like that basically, yeah. That pretty much sums it up.
In 2018, it's really all we can ask for.
yeah, fair enough. So should we move on, Mike? Should we get into our reviews of Astro Boy?
Yeah, tell me what the people have to say.
Well, here's what the people have to say, Mike. Some Netflix and Letterboxd reviews of Astro Boy. Here's a 5-star review of Astro Boy. The movie Astro Boy was on TV last week, and I watched it, and I love it, love it, love it. I hope there will be another Astro Boy. I would like if there were 8 Astro Boy movies or more. Then I'll be waiting until there's another Astro Boy movie, and I'll be posting on YouTube telling everyone what I thought about the movie.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, that seems like somebody who is probably, like, you know, 10 years old.
Yeah, fair.
Be my guess. Here's another 5-star review of Astro Boy, not from 10-year-olds. Recently, I've watched Toy Story 3 and Up, neither of which were as entertaining as this film. I wish I had seen it on a big screen. 5 stars from this 60-year-old kid.
Wow. This person out hot take to you, Mike.
I know. I like this review because I picture, like, this 60-year-old man watching Astro Boy by himself.
And being like, yeah, and throw a popcorn around.
Fuck yeah. Go, Astro, go! all right, here's some Letterboxd stuff. Here's a 3-star review of Astro Boy. Saturday morning viewing with the kids, I particularly like the scene in the arena where Astro Boy says he is not going to fight and then proceeds to destroy any robot that enters the ring.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, he didn't really have much choice. You know, the robots were attacking him. He, you know, it was defense. It was defense. Here's a 2.5-star review of Astro Boy. In the first 15 minutes of this movie, a 13-year-old is accidentally killed, purposefully resurrected as a robot with all the child's memories, and summarily and cruelly rejected by his own father. So, if you're watching this with really young children, you might have a difficult time tap dancing around all that. That being said, it's a fairly benign film and is relatively entertaining. As an additional observation, this movie has a terrible smoking or not smoking joke in it. Like, it's such a lame joke, it can't be for parents, but considering this movie came out in 2009, I can't imagine a child at the time would have had a clue what they were even referring to. Was that joke really so precious to the writer that it had to be kept? I don't remember what smoking or not smoking joke it was. I feel like that...
It possibly is Mr. Mustachio when he falls to when he falls into the hellscape that is the movie Freaks, and all the creepy robots come out. One of them is like a French waiter, and he says, like, "Oh, thank you for joining us, smoking or non-smoking."
Oh,
some, like, I don't know, it's real weird.
Okay, that's probably what it is then. In that case, that seems like a really inoffensive joke. I don't know why this person hated it so much. Here's a 1.5-star review of Astro Boy from Letterboxd. Oh wow. Why did I decide to watch this movie? I think I wanted something uplifting, and what could be more so than an animated kids movie, only this isn't. It's bleak and awful. Maybe I'm just too old to appreciate it. I can't sympathize with any of the characters, except maybe the father, but he's insane due to grief, so I don't know what that says about me. The whole junkyard family thing was cringeworthy because who thought it was a good idea to stick an old man in a house with a gazillion kids? Creepy, and yeah, really awkward. And what's up with the Robots Are Just Like Us movies? Why the indoctrination? Is there a revolution on its way? Is there something I should know about? Because they're not like us. They're heaps of junk. I'm kind of offended on original Toby's behalf that his father so easily accepts Astro as his new son. Sucks to be dead, Toby. It might have worked had it been a pretty movie, but it isn't. Visually, it's kind of crappy, actually. Also, holy crap, such blatant political agenda. No thank you. I'm not even going to ask why Astro Boy's got machine guns in his butt or why he's now doomed to forever fight crime in nothing but his underwear.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the reviews actually mentioned the machine gun in the butt thing as like an extraneous joke. I thought it was kind of funny. I think it's weird. You kind of like wonder the logic, like why did Cage build this robot with all these weapons in the inside?
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good point.
If he only wanted it to be, you know, like his son, like he wanted to like replace his son, why did he build, you know, thrusters and machine guns and stuff in the first place? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I guess he must have been a Boy Scout because. He's always prepared.
Yeah.
Fair. You're welcome.
Good joke, Mike. Good joke.
Thanks. Now, crushed it. That's it. We can end the podcast.
Oh, I got one more review here, Mike.
Okay, fine.
Here's a 1-star review of Astro Boy. At heart, this is a true Nick Cage film. Only God Cage could bring his son back to life as a robot through advanced scientific processes and then teach him the limits of the universe by ordering him to read 4 complex philosophy books. Of course, young Toby ignores his recommendation. Who needs Kant when they have Master Cage? If God himself decides that young robot Toby isn't good enough, then there is no place for the latter in this world. All hail the mighty Cage.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah, finally somebody who gets what we're doing on this podcast. You know what I mean?
Thanks, dear listener.
So I think that wraps up our review of Astro Boy, Mike. I had a lot of fun with it. Like, I thought it was a surprisingly solid time. You seemed more lukewarm on it, but that's okay. You know, we can agree to disagree on this subject. So where can we find you online this week, Mike?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
And you can find me online, twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. All of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, subscribe, rate, take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Film Book, take part in our Patreon campaign. Find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail, they can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about the title of your email, because we produce so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us for another episode of Complete Works, where we're basically doing a complete 180 from Astro Boy. I'm really excited about this one, Mike. We are talking to Nicolas Cage in Werner Herzog's Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Buckle up.
Oh, man. Have you seen this movie?
I have not.
Oh, man, I have. It is a trip. It is something. I remember I watched this movie in my freshman year of college because I had bonded with this kid that we both know, EJ. And we had bonded over a mutual love of movies, but also a mutual love of Nicolas Cage. And I remember telling him about Vampire's Kiss, and he told me about Bad Lieutenant. And so it was like kind of – and both those movies were available on Netflix for a short period of time. We watched them both. I think we did a double feature of them both.
Nice.
And it was one of the best movie-going days of my life. Plus, keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where I think we're going to talk Ready Player One when we get a chance to, but maybe Pacific Rim Uprising. Like, we'll see. We'll keep you posted on that. But, you know, keep your ears to the ground, kids, I think is all that has to be said. I'm excited. You know, Pacific Rim comes out this weekend. I'm kind of excited for it. I just rewatched the first one. And it's a fun – the first one's fun. You know, all I want is some fun.
Robots fighting monsters. That's deliver on that, and like we're probably okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just got the Astro Boy, so if
true,
if Pacific Rim doesn't have that, like I feel like, you know, I'm satisfied. I got my Astro Boy.
Okay.
But anyway, thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.
Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Think about that while you're leaving Las Vegas. Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! A Nick Cage motherfucker! Ooh. A Nick Cage motherfucker! Think about that while you're...
Cage, motherfucker! Boom!